Hi everyone, it's Sandman here, and today this is a special video. I've got someone named Kersat Pekgaz on, and he basically wants to tell you guys a special message, and he has a petition he wants everyone to sign. So take it away, Kersat.
Thank you, Sandman, for the introduction. So I'm a Title IX activist who challenges discrimination against men on college campuses. And I file complaints in, well, before I say that, I guess I should just introduce what Title IX is. Title IX is, it's a federal law that prohibits discrimination on the basis of sex. And of course, it has been used by feminists as a beating club against men for a very long time. But at the same time, there has been a lot of pushback over the last several years so that Title IX can instead be used as an instrument of justice and equity. So I'm one of those activists who just use Title IX to even out the field between men and women.
So how did you get involved in this? Like, what's your background?
I have a background in molecular biology, so it's not really related. So I read Warren Farrell's The Myth of Male Power. That was like 7 years ago. And then I decided to get involved. And it was a gradual process. I myself went through a Title IX process where a woman accused me for manipulating her emotions and lying to her by telling her that I was not attracted to her. So that's kind of like a direct quote. So she claimed that it was a form of sexual harassment because I told her that I was not attracted to her.
Where did this happen?
At the University of Southern California, which is an extreme partisan institution, like ultra woke. Yeah. And I was sanctioned with counseling, which is, you know, like one-time counseling. And it's kind of interesting because USC expels every single male who is accused. And I think in this case, even I think the female accuser came across as so unhinged, I think, that they didn't really do anything. So it was just, you know, sanctioning. But of course, that also has its negative effects.
I mean, that's the first time I've heard that. It's like they're accusing you of not wanting to, like, do anything bad to them. It's hilarious.
I've seen some cases like this. So a lot of Title IX cases are not really black and white. There's a lot of gray area, but there are some Title IX cases in which, you know, the female accuser is completely off the rocks, you know, completely unhinged. Yeah. So there was one Title IX investigation about a female student who alleged that the male professor was staring at her breast for 3 seconds. And there was a federal investigation because of this. Yes. So her claims were eventually dismissed, but, you know, there was an actual federal investigation over this. So that's, and a lot of people who haven't been through Title IX or who are unfamiliar with Title IX don't really, I mean, they are not really inclined to believe this because it just kind of like sounds so crazy. But at the same time, I think after Me Too and after we've seen some of the exaggerated cases that came up during the Me Too movement, I think some people began to see the broader picture. But before Me Too, there was Title IX. There was these star chambers oncologists that just like accused men without any due process. And even if you're a male victim of domestic violence, if your perpetrator is a woman, then, you know, she gets a free pass. So it's a very blatantly discriminatory system. There has been some improvement during the Trump administration, but again, during the Biden administration, they are winding that back.
So
we'll be back to square one.
So where do you see this going in the future? Because, like, from what you're describing, it's like women are pushing the boundaries and they're trying to take more space, not only space in the institutions, but like they're trying to take more ground when it comes to things that they can accuse men of. Now they can accuse you of not doing anything, right? Like, it's ridiculous.
Yes, it's ridiculous. But things that we consider ridiculous 10 years ago are actually being prosecuted right now. So, and it's kind of hard to guess where these things are going. So I can't really, you know, predict the future, but the good thing is now there's a more of a political balance. So Republicans have become more sensitive to the due process side of the issue. And during a Republican administration, that means that Title IX is going to be wound back so that it's not as aggressive as we have it under Democratic administrations. So that's progress, because when the Title IX thing first began, there was bipartisan support for it. So both Democrats and Republicans supported Title IX when it was first unleashed, you know, on college campuses. Okay. So it was after hundreds of cases, hundreds of legal cases, dozens of federal appeals that we came to this point. So there was a lot of like legal fight that, you know, culminated at this moment.
So in terms of your petition that you wanted everyone to sign, can you tell us a little bit more about that and where they can find that?
Sure. I mean, if you Google like Cornell Title IX men, you may get it, though I'm not sure, because Google kind of like buries results that it doesn't like. You can click my website. And,
but I'll put that in the description so people can check it out.
Yes, that would be great. Well, basically, after I got involved in due process cases, I started filing complaints for other male students who could not afford legal counsel. So at first, I was helping falsely accused male students. Then I started filing class action cases where, you know, just men banding together against these kind of discrimination. So that's my specialty. And I moved on to scholarships at first, and then affirmative action more generally. Because colleges discriminate against men in every area imaginable. So it's really quite outrageous. And Cornell is probably the worst of the worst. So I've done some research, and among the Ivies, Cornell seems to be objectively the worst one when it comes to anti-male discrimination.
Okay.
So Cornell discriminates against men in admission. It's easier to get into Cornell if you're a girl, basically. They have employment and recruitment preferences. So if you're a woman, it's easier to get a job with a Cornell degree because they have affirmative action programs in place. I call it external affirmative action programs. There is especially in STEM where women are, well, it depends, but, you know, there's this, I guess, like myth that women are a minority in STEM. And because of this, feminists have been pushing for a long time for affirmative action for women in STEM. But if you count biological sciences, then women are actually a majority in STEM, not a minority. And for some reason, they don't count biological sciences. And there are a lot of other fields like medicine, law, social sciences, where women are the absolute majority and their numbers are increasing, not decreasing. And despite all this, we have affirmative action for women in pretty much every area imaginable. So Cornell has affirmative action in admission, as I said, in employment. So an employment that falls into two categories. So if you're a female professor, it's easier to get hired, even though Cornell has more female academic employees than male academic employees. And also, it's easier to find a job with a Cornell degree because Cornell creates these external programs that help recruitment with a Cornell degree. Other than that, Cornell discriminates against men in residential halls. So there's a female-only dorm, but there are no male-only dorms, for example. And a female-only dorm is the only place where you can drink alcohol on campus. So that was one of a Cornell alumnus kind of notified me about this. So they have these double standards going on.
So when did all of these sorts of things start happening?
It goes way back. I mean, for maybe at least 30 years, I would say.
Okay, so basically,
women have been a majority for, I don't know the exact date, but I think it's been several decades. So it's not like brand new. But things are going from bad to worse because, well, you know, men are a shrinking minority, so their numbers are decreasing, not increasing. And despite all this, we have all this like crazy affirmative action programs for women.
Yeah, I think what's going to happen is you're going to see 70, 80, 90% of college students being women and a very, very small minority being males. I mean, we're already seeing that in politics. I'm predicting within the next 10 years, you're going to start to see 50, 60, 70% of politicians being female. And so I think at that point, society is going to slide really, really quickly downhill.
It's possible, yeah. And I agree that it's going to create a lot of negative consequences. But of course, the thing is, like, the feminist lobby is so powerful, and, you know, they are so, like, deaf to, you know, anything that is not coming from their ideological perspective, that it's very hard to reason with them, unfortunately. But there has been some pushback in education. So there's been a lot of positive coverage about complaints that challenge discrimination against men, for example. So we had articles published at Wall Street Journal, NBC News, USA Today, so all kind of like all the big newspapers inside higher education, etc. So I don't really know. Things are going from bad to worse. I get that feeling. But at the same time, it's kind of like beginning to see a major pushback as well.
Like, so, do you see that, obviously there can't be colleges specifically for men, but I mean, I'm looking at the world on the internet, and a lot of the knowledge that's in, you know, public and private institutions of higher learning is outdated, and it's compared to what you can find on the internet now and the people you can connect with. You know, you can learn so much more off the internet than you can in real life now.
True. I mean, you could argue definitely that colleges themselves are outdated, and, you know, it's a good idea to drop out.
But it's the accreditation.
I haven't really seen anything positive. So I have a STEM degree in molecular biology, and that was a I wouldn't say that was a waste of time. And I have a Master of Arts in English literature. That was from a Turkish university. That was also a useful program, but I attended a PhD at the University of Southern California for 6 years, and I learned pretty much nothing there. So it's just identity politics and pretty much nothing else.
No, when I went for my undergraduate, it was for art, fine art. And this was back in the mid-90s, and it was we were learning about gender and sex and the different. This is back in like 96, 97. So this is kind of before all of this stuff kind of permeated all the other universities. Yeah. And the university I went to was far left leaning, and a lot of communists that wouldn't be allowed into other universities. So back then, the other conservative universities wouldn't allow those types of professors in. So what I think happened was the professors, they got a lot of their students to become professors, and then they went off to the other universities and then just kind of spread and disseminated more information that way, and their belief system and value system that way.
Yeah, I agree. I totally agree with that. And unfortunately, there's a lot of indoctrination is definitely a major problem in higher institution. In higher education. So, and it doesn't really show any signs of improvements. So there have been, as I said, like pushbacks, and especially on the topic of gender politics, there has been a major pushback or backlash. But at the same time, the programs that we are challenging are still there. So they haven't started to disappear. Hopefully in the future. So I try not to be pessimistic about these things. And, you know, in the future, there's always a possibility that as men become a minority, as kind of like an even more endangered minority in higher education, some people may wake up and kind of like start siding with pro-male arguments. It's not impossible. We have seen something of a cultural shift during the Trump administration. And now the Biden administration is trying to wind that back. But at the same time, you know, you can't really forget something that you learn. So once that becomes part of the zeitgeist, you know, there's no going back. So I don't really know. But there are a lot of programs that do discriminate against men. Of course, there are women's studies, but there are no men's studies programs, even though there's a demand for them. And there are people who want to teach those programs as well.
Well, the classes for men's studies would probably be 90% full of women, and the professors would be women too.
That's possible. But there are people like Warren Farrell who want to teach, you know, male studies programs, so who are interested in teaching. And I've been in communication with those. Warren is one of the signatories of the Cornell complaint. Jordan Peterson is another signatory. I've collected signatures manually for a long time, and I have something like 210 signatures at this time. But I just decided to create a change.org petition instead, because, you know, just collecting signatures manually takes a lot of time. So I just decided to create a popular petition instead. So this is where we are at right now. Cornell is also interesting in that it discriminates against men in medical services. So it has a women's heart program, but it doesn't have a men's heart program, which is kind of ironic because men are more likely to suffer from heart disease than women. So it's completely topsy-turvy. So you would expect perhaps, you know, a special focus on men with heart disease, but it's the other way around. And they have a women's health center called Iris Cantor Women's Health Center, but there's no similar health center for men. And their psychiatry center specifically excludes adult men. So you can seek therapy as couples. You can seek therapy as a single woman. You can seek therapy as on behalf of children, but you cannot seek therapy on behalf of single males. So they discriminate against single males.
So if you're in that university, you can't use that service if you're a man?
It seems to be that way, yes.
Okay.
That's the kind of like most straightforward reading of the situation. Maybe they do allow some people, you know, I don't really know. I haven't seen the inner records, kind of like the medical records, but just based on kind of like how they advertise themselves on their website, they do not allow single men.
Okay. So what else would you like to add?
I wanted to reach out to collect signatures, and I would appreciate it if everyone in the audience just kind of like reaches out to their own circle of friends to collect more signatures, because this is how you kind of like just gather signatures over the long term. And every signature helps. So far, as I said, we have 200 something signatures, and Glenn Reynolds, you know, the University of Tennessee law professor, covered this story for USA Today. So I very much appreciate that, and I would like to thank him here as well.
What I'd suggest is, like you say, you already had a signature from Jordan Peterson. Why not contact him and see if he wants to repeat it on Twitter? I mean, that way you're going to get a lot more signatures.
I can try. Well, he actually tweeted in support when I was fired from my program. So I was a PhD student, but two feminist professors vetoed my dissertation. So I was terminated. So I had requested a leave of absence and it was denied. So there's like some drama over there as well. And when I was terminated, Jordan Peterson tweeted in support. So I can definitely reach out and ask him again.
Yeah, no, that I think he's got millions of followers on Twitter, right? So you could, if you reached out.
I think it's like 2 million.
Yeah, so yeah. If you do that, you're probably going to get at least 20, 30, 40, 50,000 signatures.
Hopefully. I can definitely try.
And try the same with Warren Farrell.
Warren has a smaller online following, but I could ask.
But if it gets on his, it depends on who follows him. If he has higher quality people, also maybe reach out to the Honey Badgers and also reach out to A Voice for Men if they're still running.
A Voice for Men has been delegated to a different individual. I'm a member of, do you know ICMI International Conference for Men's Issues? Okay, so I was a previous speaker there. And I'm an upcoming speaker for the next event as well. So that's another venue. But I just wanted to reach out, you know, to other people, especially MGTOW kind of like people, to collect more signatures.
I would also reach out to Terrence Pop if you can, as well as...
I don't know.
Okay, so Terrence Pop, he has a channel called Redonkulous. He's, if you go to MGTOW.tv, you'll see him there, like Terrence Pop. And then also reach out possibly to Turd Flinging Monkey. He'll also put it out there.
Okay, I can definitely do that.
And even Hammerhand, he's also got a big following too. So once you reach out to those guys, then like that'll get you some more signatures. But like I said, your best bet is if you can get that Jordan Peterson thing. That's the best one.
Okay, I can try.
All right. But besides that, any last things you want to add? Like, can you share your story about those feminist professors getting you kicked out of school? Like, that's an interesting story.
It was two feminist professors, Hilary Shore and Margaret Russett, who, well, basically, I wanted to get a leave of absence because I was struggling with, you know, like medical issues as well. First of all, they denied it, even though it's routinely granted. Like, it's your right to request a leave of absence normally. Then they created a special rule just for me saying you have to submit your dissertation earlier than usual.
What?
And if you don't do it, and if you don't do it, then you're terminated. And I knew when they came up with that rule that they were going to terminate me anyway. So I submitted the dissertation chapter, but it was rejected, and they just denied me my PhD. And those two professors are the same individuals who created, I guess, what you can call an academic coup against the previous administration. So USC's previous administration, and especially his previous president, Max Nikias, he was kind of like a more moderate guy when it came to these issues. And they basically wanted him to resign because, you know, he's an evil white male, etc. And they wanted a female president instead. So they organized this coup together with Gloria Allred. And they created publicity pressure. So, and Max Nikias was kind of like he was a gentleman, and he, you know, wasn't very kind of, I guess, like very, very conscious about these issues. So he did resign. And now the new administration has signed a massive settlement over the George Tyndall issue, who is a gynecologist who has been accused of sexual harassment. And basically the university agreed to pay more than $1 billion over the actions of a gynecologist, you know. And I, as far as I know, no criminal charges were filed. So it's kind of like a very gray area. But they still blackmailed USC. These two professors blackmailed USC for this massive amount of money. And I'm sure they kind of like benefited from this personally as well. Their names are Hilary Shore and Margaret Russell. They're at the USC's English department.
Gotcha. Well, I think we've pretty much covered everything we can.
Yes.
I think we're good to go. So the change.org petition is going to be in the description. So thanks for doing this very special, like, impromptu Sandman version episode. So people are going to get two videos in one day. Anyway, go ahead.
No, that's all. Thank you very much. It was a pleasure.
All right. Thanks again.